Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 153. Chance Watson and Molly Roberts.
Hi.
Bring you the news today. Molly, who's sponsoring us?
Silver Corner Bar. While Wallace is known for the last working stoplight on I-90 between Seattle and Boston, it wasn't the only red light in town. Did you know historic Wallace's famed Silver Corner Bar sits beneath an old brothel?
What?
Yep. The Lux Rooms Airbnb lets you step back in time and experience the history of a former bordello. The two-story brick building has been converted into boutique hotel rooms. The bordello operates illegally, yet openly, for nearly a century before closing in 1989. Stop in and say hello. Rooms are named after the girls like Barb, Frenchie, Cha-Cha, and Ginger, and offer a perfect spot for a unique and romantic getaway. This message was brought to you by the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild, fighting to rid Wallace of the evils of the drink, one minor at a time.
We got to see it. We got to see a room next to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
Have you been up there? Have you been up in the Lux
I have
rooms?
Not been up
you
into
need
the Lux
to see
rooms.
The Lux
room. Next time I go, Jocelyn.
We'll get a shout out to Jocelyn on the
yes.
show. She is a fantastic person and bartender.
And bartender,
and
yes.
business owner. And mm-hmm. I think Molly needs to see the Lux
rooms. I would love to see the Lux
They
rooms.
Are very cool. Very tastefully done. And I was lucky enough to see them before they were mm-hmm. renovated. So
cool.
The changes are pretty significant.
Awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely. Molly, it's still hot out.
Oh boy, is it. It is quite nice in our office. We do have a pretty...
It's not bad.
It's not bad. For myself, Josh, our research department probably thinks
research department
usually has a fan on him. But for me, this is pretty good temp.
You could probably use one of those, too.
You know, I have to correct myself because I think on the podcast not too long ago, I said I love the warmth. The warmth doesn't affect me. Everyone, that was incorrect.
Taking it back now.
I'm taking it back. Mm-hmm. I don't like any extreme heat. Yep. I don't know why I said that.
I was thinking
yesterday as I was
suffered
walking.
A head injury before the episode. Probably.
I think that was maybe it because I walked like 5 minutes to the park yesterday and that I was like,
I was
oh
like,
my gosh.
I don't want to do
what am I
anything
doing?
Anymore.
Yeah, my brain doesn't work. Yep. I was like, oh my gosh, I was wrong.
Same.
I was so wrong.
Yeah,
so.
It's really bad.
So yeah, it is not great.
No.
But it's hot.
Trying to stay cool.
Trying to stay cool. Trying to get into as many air conditioned buildings as you can.
Yes.
But we just watched, I feel like we've watched a lot today.
We have watched a lot today, yes.
But we just watched the trailer for a new
Dungeons and Dragons
film.
Looks very fun.
It does look fun. No, I think going more of a, because that's what, for those of you that have not played Dungeons and Dragons, it is oftentimes, most of the time, right, just a fun group of people that get together
and
go
worship
on
the
this.
Devil, yeah.
That's
a joke. Okay, so apparently, I actually just learned this not too long ago. Apparently, like in the 80s, there was like some like weird, like
you
cult
didn't know
thing.
That there was
no
satanic
idea.
Panic over Dungeons and Dragons.
I had absolutely no idea. I didn't know this. I told you I only started playing like a year ago.
Chance only got into the devil worship a year ago.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of satanic panic. People thought
had
that,
no idea.
Right, that it was all cult worship and and all that stuff. And
I just thought it was a board game, you know, like
it is. I have never worshipped Satan when playing Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. There might be parties out there, perhaps, that
sure
that worship Satan while playing, but for me, gosh,
not my cup of tea. Okay, that's understandable.
I just like to get together and like hang out with friends, and
it's a good time.
You know, it's a good time. But yeah, the movie looks really good.
Movie looks. What's his name?
Chris Pine.
Yes.
Chris Pine is the lead. And
Kirk. New Kirk.
I do love his musical skills. So, because he was in the musical Into the Woods.
Okay.
Incredible. He was phenomenal in that.
Yeah. Good actor.
He's a great actor. He's one of the good Chris's.
And he's a bard in this. So
he's a bard.
That'd be
and
fun.
A bard is close to my heart.
I've been told that this is supposed to have like huge Monty Python and the Holy Grail vibes. That movie is an absolute classic. So
it's probably one of my favorite movies.
It's so good.
It's so good.
So good.
Makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
Like, even though, I mean, right, at this point, I think we both probably have it memorized, and it's still just like,
yes.
It's so good.
Like, it just stands the test of time.
It really does. I love all Monty Python. Monty Python and the Flying Circus.
Yep.
Oh, incredible.
Life of Brian. Life of Brian is one of my all-time favorites.
Always look on the bright side of life. Doo-doo. That's got me through some times, let me tell ya.
The whole scene with the consular or whatever he is in the when he's brought in. Mm-hmm. Throw him to the floor. Throw him to the floor again, sir. Oh yes, throw him to the floor.
Oh, it's so good. So good.
So good.
So good.
So there's that, but okay, Molly, we actually have announcements.
We have announcements. Very exciting announcements.
So first off, we will have more details for you guys in probably next week.
Next week.
But we have linked up with the North Idaho Fair, which we'll read an ad here in just a second,
mm-hmm.
For a ticket giveaway. What do you think about that, folks?
To the All-American Rejects, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
We will have more on that. It sounds like we're going to have 4 tickets. Mm-hmm. That includes admission and parking. We're going to be able to give that away here probably next week, the week mm-hmm. after.
So, yeah, we'll get the details all
settled. We'll have the details to you later on.
Those...
But it's definitely going to involve liking our Facebook page
mm-hmm.
and definitely subscribing to the show.
Yes.
So if you already want to jump ahead of the game, make sure those are already taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also on today's show, for everybody who drives... Which is a fair amount of us, we have a great interview today with mm-hmm. ITD Public Information Specialist Megan Johns. Emma said her last, when we first started working together, it was Souser, but it's Johns now. So Megan Johns comes on the show and talks with me and Josh about big local projects that are going on in North Idaho. So you can plan your commute and not get stuck in traffic and... go full, what's that movie in the 90s where that guy just kind of goes nuts sitting in, not walking tall, that's The Rock.
Mm.
It's the one where it's like in the early 90s, wearing a white shirt and a black tie, standing tall, standing up, something like that.
Oh,
I can't remember. God.
I'm terribly sorry.
Come on, Molly.
I'm no help with this one
for some reason. You need to know.
I don't know every single movie ever. I'm sorry. Chance is looking it up. This is very...
Falling Down, not standing up.
I have never
Falling
heard
down?
Of this film.
Okay, so this
Falling
is like...
Falling Down, everyone. Chance just made this film up.
No, I promise I didn't. It's,
no,
oh, it's,
we
it's
didn't.
Like one of those...
Michael Douglas is in it,
it's
okay.
One of those cult classics. A middle-aged man dealing with both unemployment and divorce. William Foster is having a bad day. When his car breaks down on a Los Angeles highway, he leaves his vehicle and begins a trek across the city to attend his daughter's birthday party.
Okay.
As he makes his way through the urban landscape, William's frustration and bitterness become more evident, resulting in violent encounters with various people, including a vengeful gang and a dutiful veteran cop.
Is this a comedy?
No, it's like a dark... No, it's like a situation...
Oh my gosh.
Like, oh yeah, he goes in like to a fast food restaurant and he orders breakfast and he's like, yeah, we're 2 minutes past that, I can't do that anymore. So his response is to pull out a Tech Nine and demand breakfast.
Uh-huh.
I am the customer, you will get... It's just like, you know, when you know, most 90%, 99% of humans, when the small stuff, it doesn't get to you, you just press it. You go, okay.
Right.
2 minutes passed.
Right.
You go to McDonald's and miss the McDonald's breakfast. All right, I guess I'll get lunch.
That it's like, okay.
No, this is the ultimate, like, no, I'm not going to deal with that.
I'm not dealing with that.
No,
not
you're going to give me. No, you're going
to
give me.
Not today.
Yep.
You will give me my hash brown,
yes,
and not fries.
Oh,
okay. I could see
there
that
are some
happen.
Days I'm
I
all
love
about
a
McDonald's
hash
brown.
Hash
brown. Yep.
Oh my gosh, I love the McDonald's hash brown.
McDonald's hash browns are addicting. I don't know why.
I don't know why
probably
either.
The same reason why their fries are. Because there are days where you're like McDonald's fries and a Coke. Yep.
Yep. Just
okay. That needs to happen
exactly.
right now.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, the hash browns.
Oh, hash browns
my.
Are so good. Oh, they're the best. Like just a good morning. I need to do that more. Just like as a morning snack. Just like swing through McDonald's and pick up some hash browns.
Yeah, I do. I haven't done that recently.
At your local
yeah,
Kellogg McDonald's.
Sponsor of the pod.
Yeah. Free shout out to the
free shout out to there. McDonald's. Yeah.
There you go.
Who I'm sure need help with.
Yes, absolutely. So fun giveaway and an interview on today's show. Look for that at the end of the Coeur d'Alene headlines. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw that into the show here. So big episode today. Big reveal. We'll be going more hard with that and marketing that and letting people know how to win those tickets here coming up soon. But yes, very excited to be partnering with the fair on this.
It's
those are
cool.
God, great people over at the fair that are running this year. 100th anniversary of the thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited to go. I'm going to be there in multiple capacities. Mm-hmm. You and I are both going to be there for the podcast
mm-hmm.
With the Coeur d'Alene.
Chance will be there for
Coeur d'Alene press booth. I'll also be there with Mad Bomber Brewing. With that has some partnership with one of the beers of the fair. So very exciting. Gonna I. growing up in North Idaho, the fair is probably the one tradition that I have always gone to. Mm-hmm. I think there's only been like 2 or 3 years that I've missed.
Okay.
It's definitely since, you know, I've been an adult.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Like I've been able to drive myself. I'm not talking like when I was 8.
No, definitely.
But,
right.
You know, something like that. God, I remember I have this vivid memory when I was a kid. They used to have a fire hydrant that had eyes that would drive around at you.
Oh.
Yeah. And as a child, that's pretty terrifying.
That is terrifying.
Yeah, you think
that
these things are sentient, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like
when in reality, it was like a glorified Roomba, but, you know, in any case, yeah.
I don't love that.
I don't like
love
that
as
all.
An adult.
Oh, yeah. I definitely, you know, you look back on things and I was like, oh, that was, I probably shouldn't
like
have
Chuck E. Cheese. You're like, ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And as an adult, you go in there like, this place is pretty gross.
This place is just a fester of germs.
Not that I think we were ever going to get sponsorship from Chuck E. Cheese. But
that's out the window now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm definitely getting a call from Clint after this. Like, Chance, we need that. Oh, we need those tokens.
We need those tokens. We need that Chuck E. Cheese money. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to disparage Chuck E. Cheese on the pod.
Sorry, Clint. I apologize.
Sorry.
I'll go there and
we have to apologize for upsetting another group.
Sounds like we need to go play some skee ball and make it up. We need.
I want to jump inside of that ball pit.
Yeah.
Right in the ball pit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what's in there, and I don't care.
Do they have ball pits anymore? Is that a thing, or did that go away? I feel like when I was a kid, they were talking about how gross ball pits were.
They're disgusting.
Yeah, it's not.
They're absolutely
okay.
Disgusting.
There was actually
I'm
a fun
sure
thing.
That they're still
the,
ball pits
at the Post Falls McDonald's when I was growing up. They had a ball pit, and their gimmick was that there was a little round hole that, like, it was a target you could throw the balls into. And it was a self-cleaning machine. So, like, it would go in, like, there was it had suction. So you'd throw the balls toward it and it'd suck them up and then it would spit them out on the other end. But you would be like, why are they wet? Is because that they were being
like
cleaned.
Sanitized.
Yeah.
Oh, I do like that. There,
it was pretty smart. Whoever thought of that, whoever thought of the ball pit cleaning machine that also doubled as a fun kids thing.
You know, that does kind
that
of
guy
me out
needs
to
be,
think
that
of
guy needs to be in a mansion at least.
At least a McMansion.
Oh, a McMansion. Molly, every episode we think we've peaked.
And yet
we just keep doubling
peaking.
It up on the hits.
I know. I don't know how we do it. I was just going to add on a little, you know, it does bum me out a little bit to see the play places of McDonald's go away.
Me too.
It really does. Because that truth, I mean, it was so exciting to drive to a McDonald's and it was like, there's a play place. But then I remember
some Gen Z right now is like, you boomer. You guys don't know how good.
If a Gen Z calls me a boomer, I swear, Chance. I swear.
This
any
will
Gen
be my
Z
last
listening
episode.
Out, this will be my last episode. This will be my last day on earth if a Gen Z calls me a boomer. No, I'm just kidding. But you guys
we love
you. Know
we
how
love
good
you boomers.
We love the boomers. We love the Gen Zers. But we don't love parades, IPAs, or Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
Okay.
There he is.
All right.
I think that's it. I think we've now alienated some very arbitrary groups.
Thank goodness. We need to at least once every ep.
Hatred is very random.
It seems random, I promise that there's a lot of thought behind this.
I mean, we also have a lot of random positives. I mean, Marissa Tomei is the...
We haven't talked about Marissa Tomei for a while.
Marissa has not been on the show mentioned recently, and that's a shame.
It really is a shame.
We don't have... We need to get a picture of her in the studio here.
We really... Oh.
Like her famous headshot from My Cousin Vinny.
Ooh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yep. Okay, mm-hmm. Clint. I know the CDA Press, right? We have like a printing thing, so maybe the Shoshone News Press needs.
Clint just walks into the print studio. I got a request, guys. Like,
I need a picture of Marissa.
Oh, do you need? Do you need like?
Me.
Do we need like Coeur d'Alene Press marketing materials? No, guys.
I need
a
this
large.
Headshot.
A very large banner.
Yeah, I want it at least as big as
the Vandal
Idaho
flag.
Vandals
yeah.
flag.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so
you, Clint. I want sound tiles that have her face on them.
Oh my gosh. Okay. These are our demands.
These are our demands. Okay, let's move into some news.
Excellent. But first.
The North Idaho State Fair is set to celebrate its 100th anniversary this year from August 19th to 28th and wants you to join in on the fun. From monster trucks and extreme bull riding to carnival rides and live concerts, there's something for everyone at the fair. Tickets are now on sale for the fair's concert series, which includes performances by Jordan Davis, Skillet, and the All-American Rejects that we'll be giving away tickets for. For tickets or more information, if you want to buy them, visit nisfair.fun. You could be one of the lucky winners, though, that get free tickets. All right, let's move into Coeur d'Alene Post-False Press headlines for Wednesday, July 27th. Headline, Cowboy Code guides governors. This is by Bill Bealey. The first meeting of the Western Governors Association in 3 years brought together 18 state leaders guided by the Cowboy Code. When they finish what they start, said WGA Executive Director Jim Augsbury, when something needs doing, they do it. It's not what they say, it's what they do. Citing the 1934 novel Code of the West by Zane Grey, Augsbury spoke of the unwritten rules centering on hospitality, fair play, loyalty, and respect for the land. The three-day conference opened Tuesday at the Coeur d'Alene Resort saw some of the West's most influential men sit down for talks and presentations about challenges facing them and their constituents, including the economy, energy, health, cybersecurity, supply chain issues, and drought. Quote, "This is going to be a very productive meeting here in Coeur d'Alene," Colorado Governor Jared Polis said during a press conference. Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon said Yellowstone National Park, which recently suffered millions of dollars in damage and historic flooding, quote, "is open, ready for business, and going strong. That's because of the great neighborly relationships that we have." The event, hosted by Idaho Governor Brad Little, also pulled in Governors Doug Ducey from Arizona, David Ig from from Hawaii. Clint's just going to go after me on that one. He's, how do you not know how to pronounce the Hawaii governor's name? Greg.
Yeah, Chance has got a lot of names here.
That's so bad. Name guy here, everyone. Greg Giaforte. Doug Bergman.
Bergum.
And Spencer Cox of Utah and Mark Gordon of Wyoming. Little said there are problems, quote, "are somewhat unique, but they're also somewhat common." He said the interdependency of the Western states is their, quote, "bread and butter, creating effective partnerships and collaborations to deal with challenges including land management, drought, and invasive species." Quote, "It's the chemistry of all of us getting together and talking about what's working and what's not, what we need to do better, and how we need to plan for the future," Little said. He also said that that states need to leverage their resources to better utilize an aging workforce and deal with a shortage of affordable housing. He pointed out that many of the Western states are the fastest growing areas in the nation. The annual meeting continues today with Dennis McDonough. McDonough, yeah. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, outlining how states and the federal government can work together to help veterans facing homelessness, mental and behavioral health issues, and medical needs from combat service. There will also be roundtable discussions on protecting the supply chain and restoring burned landscapes. Hopefully something good comes out of that meeting.
All right, yeehaw.
Always good to get people together in a room. And
I agree. It is always good to get leaders come together and just talk and communicate. Definitely. Alrighty, Fort Ground Grill to stay in business, baby!
Woohoo!
After North Idaho College trustees approved the $1 million purchase of Fort Ground Grill, the restaurant will remain open. Finalized earlier this month, the sale is for the property and the building in the form of a clean shell without any fixtures or items related to the restaurant. By law, the college cannot pay more than the appraised value of $1 million. The property was owned by Steve Widmire, Coeur d'Alene's former mayor, and his wife, Marie. Widmire said a private party approached the couple this year with interest in buying the restaurant. Though they hadn't been looking to sell, Widmire said the offer prompted them to consider the possibility. But first, they wanted to give another party a chance to make an offer. Quote, "I felt a duty to North Idaho College." Laura Rumpler, NIC's chief communications officer, said the purchase made sense as part of the college's long-range planning efforts. For years, NIC has endeavored to purchase properties that are contiguous or within the main campus area as they become available. Military Drive, north of River Avenue, is of particular interest. Located on the corner of those streets, the Fort Ground Grill is nestled between two properties already owned by NIC. Rumpler said the college has no immediate plans for the space. For that reason, the purchase agreement allows Widmire to lease the property from NIC for $1,200 a month. Either party can terminate the lease with 60 days notice, but Widmeyer said he doesn't see that happening anytime soon. Quote, it could be years into the future. As far as our employees and our customers go, nothing has changed.
Okay.
That
place has been a fixture of the North Idaho College campus for a while. I'm glad that it's sticking around.
I am too.
Yep.
I am as well.
Moving on, staffing shortages prompt changes to 911 services.
Oh, heavens.
Boy, oh, boy.
The sick continues.
Here it is. The Kootenai County Sheriff's Office announced on Tuesday that some changes to non-emergency 911 services due to critical staffing shortages. Quote, every effort will be made to answer 911 emergency calls in a timely manner, a sheriff's office news release said. It's not confidence inspiring. Non-emergency calls are being sent to a phone tree where callers can leave voicemails. When time allows, dispatchers will review the voicemails and enter calls for service. Separate voicemail boxes have been established for animal control calls for both the city of Coeur d'Alene and Kootenai County. The 911 center serves Kootenai County and its visitors, as well as 15 different law enforcement and fire agencies throughout the county. Just 10 emergency communication officers and one call taker currently work at the 911 center, which is approved for 25 such employees. That's less than half.
That's rough. That's very,
like, you're running at like 45% staffing.
Right.
That's dispatchers are responsible for answering 911 calls, text messages, and non-emergency lines, as well as monitoring multiple radio channels. Last year, the center answered more than 148,000 incoming phone calls, of which approximately 53,000 were 911 calls. Staff made more than 50,000 outgoing calls and entered almost 140,000 calls for service for the various agencies. So far in 2022, the center has received more than 17,000 calls via 911. In an effort to combat staffing shortages at the 911 center, Kootenai County Commissioners approved a mid-year pay increase for emergency communications officers. Negotiations are reported underway to fund additional pay increases for emergency communication officers and supervisors. The current starting wage is $20.80. That's not bad.
Not bad.
But that job is so demanding. Like, you are literally nobody. In fact, it's a crime if you did this. But like, nobody calls 911 to say like, "Hey, my day's going great."
Right.
Like,
it's the worst.
You are dealing with somebody with their most worst moment of their life.
Yes.
Or one of them.
You are trying to remain calm as they are. Yep. Right. Yeah.
Having their worst day of their life and dealing with a bad situation.
Right.
Exactly. So it's a tough job.
That is a tough job.
Tough job. Mentally taxing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The taproom is open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. To learn more, visit RadioBrewingCompany.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole. All right, moves into Friday, July 29th headlines.
Criticism of library contents continues.
I wish it wouldn't.
I also wish it wouldn't.
I wish it would not do that.
I wish we could just leave librarians alone, but apparently not. This is by Kay Thornbrew. While some area Republicans continue to push for certain materials to be removed from area libraries, staff maintain that libraries must include books on all topics, including those that some deem controversial or objectionable. Quote, the library can't discriminate, said Community Library Director Amy Rhoda. We have books on all viewpoints. At a meeting of the Kootenai County Reagan Republicans on Thursday, Mariana Cochran led a presentation about what she called toxic books available to children and teens through the Community Library Network. Cochran of Rathdrum is one of several community members who have objected to certain materials, especially books that relate to race or the LGBTQ+ community. Rhoda said the concerns voiced at the meeting don't appear to be representative of the majority of library patrons. Quote, we've had a few concerns from a very small group. Minutes from library trustee meetings over the last 6 months show that much of the criticism delivered via public comment has come from the same people, including Cochran. During meetings where more than a handful of people spoke, public comment was split between those who support removing certain books from libraries and those who want the books to stay. Cochrane criticized some library services, including the online catalog that allows library card holders to search for books, find more books related to topics of interest, and put books on hold. After that, patrons can have their desired book sent to the library closest to them, where they can pick it up and check it out via kiosk without interacting with a librarian. Cochrane said she thinks the service makes it too easy for children and teens to access books their parents don't want them to read. Quote, "There's no adult intervention," she said. Rhoda noted that minors can't get a library card without parental permission. She encourages parents who don't want their children to read about certain topics to keep an eye on what books their children check out. Quote, "Parents are the ones who get to make those decisions," she said. At the meeting, Cochrane distributed a flyer that included a link to a list of more than 600 books to avoid, which labeled the books based on content. You ready? This is exciting. The labels are abortion, anti-police, bisexual, drugs, gay, gender identity or fluid, occult, racism, rape, sex, trans. Wow.
Okay.
Some books received multiple labels. The list gives no additional information or context about the content of the books. Cochrane said she believes that library books are grooming children into identifying as gay or transgender. Cochrane also provided a smaller list of recommended books, many of which are in the library's collection. Community members can request that certain material be reconsidered. Such material undergoes review by library staff who read it in full, research it, and consider whether it meets the library's material selection policy. The Community Library Network uses several criteria to determine which items to add to the collection, including usefulness or lasting value, popularity, and user demand, representation of trends, subjects, or genres of local or national interest. Some who object to the contents of public libraries have stopped patronizing them entirely. The library collection has more than 200,000 books, Rhoda said, with something for every reader. Staff can help parents find the right books for their kids, whether they're looking for a particular topic or want to avoid one. Quote, "If you don't want a certain book, we have hundreds of other books that we'd be happy to share."
There are so many layers to this. There are
a lot of layers.
I want to go with like the very obvious one. Like, these individuals that are upset with the library unaware that the internet exists?
That's like a good question.
That they are upset, like going to the library is, oh, you know, I don't like this content at the library. Like they could accidentally run across something bad here. Are they aware that we carry around devices that have
you can search anything, truly anything
in the world and find a lot worse stuff than what's available at the library?
What's available at the library?
Yeah. Yep.
Like, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, I just don't. It's like you have a dam and the dam has a giant hole in it and you're concerned with like the graffiti on the other side.
Right.
Like, I just don't understand. It's almost like they just want a conflict, at this point.
It does almost feel like, right, that...
So I'm going to go back to our tried and tested opinion on this. Like,
right.
A library is a place of knowledge.
Yes.
You should never be okay with taking whatever it may be.
Right. And yes, I do think that, of course, there are books with mature themes.
Sure.
Shades of Grey? No, of course not. Sure. That's a mature book.
Mark it as mature. And if you're like, well, you know, the librarian's not making sure my kid doesn't read this.
Well, then that's on you.
It's kind of on the parent.
That's the whole thing here, too, is it's like librarians, it's not their job.
They're not
job.
Babysitters and they're not parents.
Yes.
They're making sure.
Your job, this quote, there's no adult intervention. The adult intervention
would
is
be you.
The parent
would
checking
the
and
parent.
Seeing what your kids are checking.
Sure.
If you're so worried about this.
It's not the librarian's responsibility
Absolutely
to do this.
Absolutely not.
Now, when the child starts, you know, hitting somebody with a book or... But that's sure, that sure. The librarian's supposed to make sure the books aren't damaged.
Right. So we
And shush them.
Going to the library and just be quiet,
right.
You guys. Yeah, so, this is, I mean, right. This has a lot of layers.
Like, I'm not even going to dig into, like, her perceived problems with those specific groups. Like, that's obviously just, that's just hate mongering.
Right.
But I think that, I mean, the larger topic at hand is, you know, kids being able to get to books that they shouldn't.
The larger topic is, keeping the children safe. I don't think that the library is doing anything. Exactly. When the internet is out
it's
there.
Right.
Let's focus. Oh my gosh. Oh boy.
Yeah. I think
this is one of those things that I'm just getting tired of.
It's just a non-issue,
I
guess.
It's just a non-issue that it's like, why are we stressing these librarians out even more?
Right.
Why are we trying to remove books from the library? What's that movie? There's some movie, right, where all the art and all the books and everything is removed. And of course, that's like an extreme.
I think her first quote in this, the library can't discriminate. We have books on all viewpoints. Like, to me, that ends the discussion.
That ends the discussion. If you want, there's still, I believe, and I could be wrong, a Christian bookstore.
Sure.
Have a
Christian section. Sure, make sections. That's great.
I know. I don't get why. I mean, I do get it. I shouldn't say I don't get it, because I do get it. I understand.
From one of my favorite book series when I was a series of unfortunate events.
Yeah.
A library is an island in a sea of ignorance.
Gosh, I love those books. Mm-hmm. Those are great
books.
Or
is it an oasis in a desert of ignorance? Something like that.
Something
along those lines.
Something that the library provides you with.
Yeah, knowledge, with in a place where there is not.
Exactly.
There you go.
Oh, all right. Okay. That's enough on that subject for now.
All right. Moving on. Buttigieg praises West for green efforts. Did I say that right?
I don't know. I think so.
I think it's Buttigieg.
Buttigieg?
No, I think it's Buttigieg. Buttigieg?
Keep going. I'll look it up.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Bumblebee Cumberbatch.
Secretary of Transportation Benedict Cumberbatch outlined how climate change is affecting... I'm just kidding. Pete Buttigieg outlined how climate change is affecting the nation's transportation infrastructure in his presentation during the final day of the Western Governors Association annual meeting. Quote, climate change is real. Climate change is here. You typed the name in your computer and it's like, I got nothing for you. I don't know how to say the
name.
We're gonna
see here.
Pete Buttigieg.
I got it right.
You got it.
Woo, go Chance and his names. name guy right here.
Name guy. Yep.
Climate change is real. Climate change is here, the former presidential candidate said Thursday morning in a short speech at the Coeur d'Alene Resort. He said the country is seeing droughts longer than the Dust Bowl, devastating floods in Yellowstone National Park, mudslides in Colorado, and unprecedented triple-digit temperatures in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. All of these have washed out roads, shut down railroads, and forced the suspension of transit services, he said. The cooperation between federal government and states is critical for safety and security of the country, he said. Quote, fortunately, we're seeing great leadership and great unity from the governors here and from your states, Buttigieg said. He praised the West for its green efforts. He said seven of the top states with electric vehicle ownership are in the West. And recently, Utah, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, and Wyoming united to create an electric vehicle charging network. I did not know this. That's
I did not
cool.
know that either.
Quote, we are thrilled to be your partners, building a charging network that powers the next generation of American travel, he said, adding that the administration of President Joe Biden is, quote, proud to work alongside you to protect infrastructure against the climate threats that are already upon us. Buttigieg credited the West with being deeply connected to traditions of transportation, going back to horse-drawn carriages on the Oregon Trail. What a great game. Buttigieg said that the country is in a moment of profound change, in part because of the shock waves from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. The country's transportation system has never faced greater disruptions, but from those that have come creative solutions, he said. The Democrat said there is no doubt the Biden administration has differences with Western governors on many important issues and policies, but they can and must work together to meet the challenges of climate change. Quote, we have a real opportunity to make very good progress together in areas where we find common ground, he said. The work that you're already doing on climate and resilience is, I think, a model of cooperation, a model whose success will be measured in lives saved, homes protected, roads and bridges and rail lines kept open, and jobs created as well. Well said. The 3-day WGA annual meeting wrapped up on Thursday. Well, that's a good way to end it.
Good way to end it.
Yeah. I think electric cars are kind of cool.
I do too. I don't know much about them.
No, I honestly don't. I know, living up here, I know there's that joke that, like, you know, a charging station is charged by, you know, coal plants.
Right.
So that kind of if that's the truth, then that kind of offsets everything. But I mean, we got to get there, you know.
I agree.
I want a car that runs on water, but you know, whatever.
No,
you don't.
French fry oil.
Whoa.
Do that, right?
Okay.
That's a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. McDonald's getting into the
Mickey D's, baby. We're looking industry. At you. That's right. Start using that French fry oil.
The U.S. Silver Corporation owned Galena Mine in Wallace, Idaho is currently accepting applications for the position of maintenance supervisor. The maintenance supervisor is responsible for overseeing all aspects of maintenance needs. The ideal candidate for the position would have an associate's degree in maintenance-related fields, 5+ years of experience, and 2 years in a supervisory role. This role is an excellent opportunity to work on a variety of projects, take charge of your career, and make a difference on a small team in a dynamic work environment. U.S. Silver offers competitive wages, full employee benefit package, which includes medical, dental, vision, life, and disability insurance, PTO, 401k, and pension plan. To apply for this and any other open position at the Galena Mine, visit www.americasgold.com/careers. Takes in two Shoshone News Press headlines. No, it doesn't. This is where we're putting in our interview. All right, everybody. Get ready for it. Here comes our interview with ITD Public Information Specialist Megan Johns. Hey, Megan. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're also here with Josh McDonald, of course.
Yeah.
Megan, we're talking massive projects, just so much traffic and congestion. I'm just kidding. We are talking project road construction across North Idaho. The biggest news I think that you guys recently came out with is the work that has kind of been a long time coming in Post Falls.
Yeah, so we have, of course, have our ongoing construction to expand Highway 41, but we were just able to announce the start of construction at the 41 interchange with I-90. So drivers in Kootenai County are going to have even more construction to drive through.
Oh, and everybody just loves that so much. as a Post Falls native, I definitely understand why that area is being worked on, though. So while I'll still probably be upset about traffic jams, I definitely do understand why you guys are working on that particular spot.
So Megan, what can you tell us? Like, what is the scope of the work that's being done there? I know that corridor between Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene is among the most congested, and it gets probably at its very worst right as you approach the Highway 41 off-ramp, especially when you're coming from Coeur d'Alene. People start slowing down. That big curve scares them. So what are you guys doing there?
You know, we are expecting to have double the drivers essentially on I-90 by 2045. So we're trying to prepare for the growth, but it's also growth we're already seeing on our system. And when you have more drivers and the infrastructure can't handle that load, you see more crashes. And so we're trying to modernize the interchange, make it safer, and make it more efficient.
Okay.
Gotcha. In terms of, you know, the practicality side of stoppages and traffic jams and, you know, reroutes, what should when should people start seeing some reroutes and that kind of thing?
Yes, so we're going to have about 3 years of construction. This first year is going to really impact I-90 only, and it's no reroutes. We're just going to drop the speed limit during the day. At night, if the contractor's working, we'll close a lane in one direction, and again, the speed limit will be reduced. There will be other closures coming up, but nothing this year.
Okay. All right. So that's good. At least it puts it out a little bit.
We're giving people a chance to get used to us.
Yes.
Megan, you had mentioned a higher number of accidents. Has there been a higher number of reported accidents in that area over the last few years?
Yes, and we've even had some people unfortunately die as a result of those crashes. And in particular, we're talking about that westbound loop ramp to get off of the interstate.
Yes, that's a very strange one indeed.
Yeah, it's one of those where you're going around it and the angle of the curb changes partway through it. So it's not just that it's curving, but that it curves and then curves again.
Right. That makes sense. And so one of the ultimate goals of this project is to rectify that?
Yes. So after construction is complete, we will no longer have any loop ramps as part of that interchange.
Wow.
And all the ramps will also come together at a single point. So right now that interchange is kind of spread out, and that's just the way it was developed over the years as issues popped up. But after construction, it's going to look very different. So we really want to encourage people to visit the website and check out a video we have made just so they know how to navigate this new interchange.
Gotcha.
That's really cool. We'll probably we'll get that link from you and share it along with this podcast, because quite frankly, I am incredibly curious myself. That loop off ramp is the bane of my existence, to the point where I will consider getting off at the next one just so I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because I hate navigating all of the lights through there and all of the traffic. It just causes me such horrid anxiety.
Oh, taking my driver's test when I was in high school and getting off the freeway right there, I remember I was so petrified of getting off right at that spot.
Yes, no, it is probably our biggest, I'll say, complaint from drivers who use the interchange. And when we were developing, you know, what this interchange would look like, that was one of the number one requests. Get rid of the loop ramp and, can you build it sooner than you're planning? We want this now.
Gotcha. So, okay, and that's not you. As you mentioned previously, there is still continuing work going on 41. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so work started in 2020 to update Highway 41 between Post Falls and Raftrum from two lanes to a divided four-lane facility. And again, that just goes back to the growth and the congestion we were seeing on that highway.
Yep.
And we are in the final months of construction of that project, but we have started paving. And if anyone knows anything about paving, impacts are a bit chaotic. We're going to be moving people back and forth in and out of our way so that we can get the paving done and get the project completed sooner.
Gotcha. So we're only looking at more, you know, limited closures and limited lanes for another month or so?
I don't know if I can be that optimistic.
Okay.
Impacts will be pretty intense over the next month, and then depending on which portion of the project you're in, settle down in probably September or October.
Gotcha. Okay. So still not doing bad for the rest of the year, though.
Yeah.
Yes. And I know there's been like some concern, you know, we're starting work on the interchange and we haven't wrapped up the other work on 41. And what it comes down to is, number one, we got some new funding and we were able to advance this project, which was in line with the community's desires from our public open houses. And the first year of the interchange work won't really impact 41. So I know a lot of people are like, oh God, they're adding more to the mix.
Right.
We are, but we're expecting it to be a temporary overlap with little additional impacts.
As I say, I will probably just try to avoid 41 for the moment, okay. It definitely doesn't sound as bad, you know, once we start talking about it as it could be anyway.
Oh yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Let's push north. I know you guys are working on a project just north of Athol.
Yeah, that project is also about expansion, building US 95 out to four lanes over the hill, and then also the Granite Hill, I should say, and then also adding some frontage roads. And the big safety benefit of that project comes from the frontage roads, where you're carrying people to a well-developed intersection to then get on 95. You know, 95 is a high-speed facility, and if we can get people to the best intersections to turn onto it, it's safer for everyone.
That makes sense. Josh, you were just mentioning earlier that stretch is kind of interesting.
Oh, my goodness. So where they're working up there, like, you come around a corner on 95, and if you've ever driven the 95 between Coeur d'Alene and Sandpoint, it's a beautiful drive. I mean, you get to see so much of North Idaho, kind of the diversity of the landscape. You pass by Silverwood.
A lot of mountains.
But you come around this turn, and all of a sudden, there's the cones there letting you know. But then you kind of come out into a clearing where the road kind of dips down into a little gully here.
Yeah.
And comes up. And it's so bare and kind of spread out. And, like, it almost looks like a really intricate, like a dinosaur excavation
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
It's the only way I could describe it when I first saw it. So, I mean, that's how it looked when I went to Sandpoint early last month. So, I mean, I'm sure it looks way different just 8 weeks later. But 8 weeks ago, it really caught me off guard when I came around that turn there.
That's funny. Yeah, that area has always been, it seemed like, it just in stark contrast to the rest of the freeway.
Yeah, it's just one of the spots where it's not kind of flat and straight. It turns and dips, and then as you're coming up another kind of slight turn as you're coming up the hill on the other side of it, on the northern part of it. So I'm looking forward to see what that looks like when it gets done. I think it's probably going to be really cool. Did you guys just finish a project near, there was a junction near,
Lancaster?
Is that the one that takes you into Rathdrum?
Yes.
No. So 95, a little bit north of Lancaster, but yeah, we did just wrap up a project, at Garwood, mm-hmm. the Garwood
right.
area.
Right.
This was kind of a two-phase project where we were first working on the 53 interchange and then we were building the Garwood Bridge. So we just announced that it's going to open to traffic, you know, tomorrow actually.
Woo!
Yeah, drivers are going to be ready for us to be out of there. And that point is very near.
There you go. Awesome. That's some good news on that front. So anything else that you wanted to add to the Granite North project?
I would just let folks know that we're looking to wrap up this year. We're in the paving process right now. And once the contractor is able to put down some good pavement, we'll open things up and shift things around. It'll probably, we're talking maybe September sometime of getting that paving done and opening everything back up. Some work will continue through October, but it'll look pretty normal for how it's going to look after construction after September.
Nice.
Sounds good to me.
So we'll move into more our neck of the woods now. And I know I feel bad for you guys. You guys have kind of probably had enough of the Silver Valley people. Probably blown up your phone. We can start in Mullen or we can start at 4th of July Pass. It's your call.
Dealer's choice.
But I-90 through there has been in rough shape for a little bit.
Yeah, and we've been hearing that, and I will throw Silver Valley a bone. I think generally we consider you guys to be the most comfortable with construction in the sense that you're happy when we're there and you're relatively easy on us on impacts, and we're happy to be getting to work on I-90. We've been getting a lot of concerns, and that's why we have, oh gosh, like 8 work zones that are going to be out there east of Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah.
So drivers are asking for it, and it's zones are going to keep popping up, and they're going to get exactly what they wanted.
Perfect. Boy, there you go.
I guess for us, from the news standpoint, we wrote a story about it last week. Let's just start in Mullen, and we'll talk about I-90. For those of you who might not have driven to Montana or up to Mullen, I-90 between Wallace and Mullen might have been similar or akin to driving on the moon. there were holes that if you drove a small compact car, you were losing the tire. And I know a few people that lost multiple tires. So
it's one of those where like after over years, you can see how asphalt gets discolored and lightened or bleached by the sun. This area, it almost looked like the color of sidewalk because it you could see the age on this stretch of road.
Oh, definitely. And then when you add in the percentage of commercial vehicles that pass through, it's not really cars that wear down a road quickly. It all comes down to the heaviness of those commercial vehicles. And, you know, it's over I-90. It's a critical freight corridor. And so, yeah, that road wears out and certainly has been showing its age.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, but those areas particular, so we look at the east side of 4th of July Pass. We look at the western side of really look out all the way down into Wallace. These are areas that 3-4 months out of the year require chains on these big vehicles. So I'm assuming that those chains are not gentle on the asphalt.
They're not, but it's one of those things where when conditions call for it, we want it to be safe for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you guys know, the second you have a truck spin out and lose control, you could have all lanes of the interstate blocked. Mm-hmm. And then once those lanes are blocked and it's hard to get emergency services there because of the traffic queuing, if it's in the winter, snow is building up on the rest of the road because our crews can't get through. So it's not something we do lightly.
Like phases
but
of the
it
moon.
Is something we have to do.
Like phases of the moon, you can predict it's going to happen.
So one of the biggest projects right now, I mean, Mullen, you guys are fixing up the freeway there, doing some work to basically get the old asphalt out and the new asphalt in on some of those spots where it's in really bad shape. But between Kellogg and Elizabeth Park, you guys are working on two very major bridge projects as well.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of work zones, and that project will stick around till next year as well. So a lot of the ones that are popping up now, the more simple paving jobs, will be done by the end of season. But Division and Elizabeth will be working on those next year as well.
And those are full bridge replacements.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot more to it. And that's why we're going to be there longer.
Who funded these projects? Are these funded by ITD? Are they funded like through like LTAC or like where's the funding come from?
So generally funding for Idaho Transportation Department projects on highways come from the gas tax and vehicle registrations. But we also get a fair amount of money from the federal government. We're called a donee state, where we get more money from the federal government than we put in. And then you look at other states like California, where they're a donor state, and they're getting less back than they're putting in. So a lot of road improvements in Idaho come from federal dollars.
Gotcha. Mm. Okay. All right. Moving on, I think the last major project that we're talking about here, the work at the base of 4th of July Pass.
Yeah, and that just kicked off yesterday. So we're in the process of building what we call crossovers, temporary pavement we use to shift traffic to different bounds of the freeway so we can work on a section and then shift people back and then work on the other direction. So we're in that process. We're going to be paving in the area. That was a section that got really bad over the winter, and we actually added funds to this project to basically allow us to do more work than we were originally planning. So we heard you. We added more money. We're going to get more done in that area.
I have one more recommendation. If you're on I-90 going eastbound and you cross the Big Creek Bridge.
Oh, yes.
There is a hole that is forming right after the bridge ends that if you hit it just right, I feel like it could flip your car over. But I don't know. It was like a thing that 2 months ago wasn't a thing. But suddenly it very much is a thing.
I hit it this morning.
So if you want to just leave some notes or something, or just, hey, the news press guys wanted to put in a request, kind of like you're the radio DJ. We're requesting a song. No, we're just requesting a hole get looked at. Just look at this hole for us, please. It'd be great.
You know, it helps. Potholes are one of those things that, can appear out of nowhere. And I know our maintenance crews, while they don't love going out there, every day, multiple times a day to try and keep that hole filled, it does actually help us when people bring it to our attention because we can't be everywhere all at once.
Right.
But it's a very interesting one. It kind of looks like it's a spot where Superman landed.
Yes.
like you know how it's like crumbly all around and there's like ripples. A little crater. Yeah, there's like a little ripple. It looks like Superman landed right there in the freeway. It's a very interesting one.
Yeah, and it's going to make it harder to fill, when the rest of the pavement around it isn't holding up so well.
Yep.
It's even harder for our patches to stay in place, and that's why you need a bigger improvement to come through, and that's exactly what happened near 4th of July.
Gotcha. We covered that extensively a couple times where, I mean, it wasn't even just potholes. I mean, it was like somebody had dug a hole in the ground.
It was
so bad.
Like trenches.
Yeah.
So
and actually while we were out there, it was the middle of winter. That was the other challenging part. Our crews needed to plow the road, but we also needed to make sure the road was passable. And we unfortunately had someone hit one of our operators while they were in equipment out there
Oh, no.
trying to get the job done. Yeah.
Oh no, my God.
That is definitely something you want to avoid. They don't want to be inconveniencing you just as much as you don't like being inconvenienced.
Oh yeah, and they especially, you know, working next to 70-mile-per-hour traffic is daunting on a good weather day, much less a snowy night where you're trying to patch this pothole. So we always remind people, slow down, give us some extra room anytime you can.
Absolutely. That makes sense. Well, Megan, thank you for coming on the show. If people were interested in the projects we talked about on the show or any of the other ones going on, how would folks get more information on that?
Yeah, we've posted a lot of information online if you go to itdprojects.org. And then, of course, if you follow us on social media, we're constantly pushing things there as well.
Awesome. Megan, thanks again for coming on. And I'm sure as long as there's going to be traffic in North Idaho, I'm sure we're going to bring you back on the show.
Oh, I'm sure. I'll be popular.
Thanks, Megan.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Hopefully you can use that information that you learned from Megan there and plan your routes accordingly. Mm-hmm. Plan your commute and try not to get stuck in traffic.
Try not to. If you do, well, listen to these two cuties.
There you go. Just throw us on and kick back in the AC.
Kick back and relax in the AC.
If you're listening to this right now stuck in traffic, we're here for you.
We're here for you. We support you.
We do. We do support you. We love you. You're a great person. And
you are a great person.
You're going to get through this.
You are going to get through this traffic. traffic. Yes. Put it on my chapstick. Oh,
God. this is my last episode here at the News Press. Not just kidding. It is actually my last day at the News Press here full time.
It is.
Moving out to Post Falls.
Oh,
so,
my goodness. Change is coming.
We're a little goofy out here today.
We're a just today. Normally, just we are strictly biz.
Totally business. Mm-hmm. 100%. All right. Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, July 29th. Headline, Fitzgerald to resign next month. This is by Josh McDonald. The Shoshone County Democratic Central Committee is looking for interested parties to fill an upcoming vacancy on the Shoshone Board of County Commissioners. District 1 Commissioner Mike Fitzgerald formally submitted his letter of resignation on July 14th and made it known that his final day as a commissioner would be August 5th. The process of filling the vacancy of a county commissioner is defined in Idaho Code 59906A and is slightly different from many of the other processes for filling a vacancy at the county level. Most of them, similar to a recent announcement from Shoshone County Sheriff Mike Gunderson, are handled locally by the BOCC themselves and the local party they're affiliated with. Instead, according to the code, the process for getting a new commissioner following the resignation or retirement of another requires participation from several different entities. Quote, in the event of a vacancy on a board or county commissioners, such vacancy shall be filled as herein provided. The county central committee of the same political party, if any of the former member whose seat is vacant, shall submit within 15 days a list of 3 nominations to the governor. The governor shall fill the vacancy by appointment from the list of 3 nominations within 15 days. However, the code goes on to further state that if the governor doesn't render a decision in those 15 days, then the decision goes back to the central committee, who has 15 days to make a decision. If the committee cannot decide, then the governor has 5 days to choose anyone he likes who has the qualifications. In this instance, it is possible that the governor could pick the person who aligns more closely with him or even completely by random, which means that anyone who is nominated needs to be a qualified candidate. By that same Idaho code, this selected individual will serve out the remainder of the term for which the original commissioner was elected. Fitzgerald, who ran as a Democrat, was elected to a 4-year term in 2020, so whoever fills his seat will be in the position until the term ends at the beginning of 2025, unless they are re-elected in 2024. According to the chairman of the Shoshone County Democratic Central Committee, very little interest has been shown in filling the position. Oh. Eligibility for the seat is very much location-based, meaning that the nominees must reside in Shoshone County's District 1, which includes all of the city of Kellogg through the western half of the city of Osborne.
Throw my hat in.
There you go.
No.
Just kidding.
Nope.
The boundaries in Osborne are a little hard to pin down, but for simple reference, if you live west of 3rd Street, right off of I-90 off-ramp, then you are likely within District 1, so Polaris and
Yes.
Everything. Yeah. Right. That, okay. Yeah. Clarifications for the boundaries may be found by contacting the Shoshone County Clerk's Office at 208-752-1264. Anyone living in those boundaries is interested in filing for District 1 seat for the Shoshone Board of County Commissioners, they need to reach out to Dwayne Little, chairman of the Shoshone County Democratic Central Committee, with resume. Mm. Little has stated that SCDCC will convene on August 18th to formalize the nominations that we'll be sending to Governor Brad Little. Very complicated process.
My goodness, it is a complicated process.
I do want to give a shout out to Mike Fitzgerald. I've had the pleasure of working with him every year that I've been here in Shoshone County, the last 6-7 years. He's been an absolute jewel to work with.
Yeah,
very professional.
So kind of funny. Great guy. I knew him because he would come into radio, and so I just knew him as Fitz. And then I started working here, and it was like, oh my gosh, you're one of the county commissioners? He's just such a...
He's an average guy. You wouldn't know that he's a commissioner.
Nice kind of... Nope. Exactly. Yeah, I was like, you're just Fitz, who comes in with your wife and like hangs out. Like, it was pretty cool.
Salt of the earth, dude.
He really is.
Super intelligent.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't a side gig. He took it very seriously. But the guy also is like a brilliant engineer.
Right.
I've sat and talked to them about stories of him going to Africa, and it's just crazy. Guy's lived 1,000 lives.
He really has. Yeah.
Enjoy
retirement.
I mean, he's going off to Kellogg now, but right. Yeah. But yeah, there you go. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Sorelli for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands they sell. Whether you need a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. Apologies, everybody. I'm starting to lose my voice.
Yeah, Chance is starting to turn into the Batman.
Yeah, I'm the world's greatest detective.
All right, we'll take a little break, and I will read about my favorite thing in the entire world, the Sixth Street Melodrama. Mm-hmm. New sign brightens the melodrama. This is by Molly Roberts. Me.
Me.
The Sixth Street Melodrama and Theater, known for its live shows and quality entertainment, is shining a little brighter thanks to its new live theater neon sign. The theater was founded in 1983 by Don and Joan Springer, as well as Pat and Cheryl Grounds, and was originally on the lot where the Northern Pacific Depot Museum currently stands, but was moved to the old Kelly Hardware building in 1984. Many changes have occurred since moving to the original building, like remodeling the downstairs, changing the storefront, installing a furnace, and painting both interior and exterior walls. Other upgrades have included new theater seats and remodeling the theater's dressing rooms for the actors upstairs, which I was very happy about. Most recently, the new neon sign was created and installed. As with most upgrades to the theater, this was a collaborative effort between past and present members of the theater board and members of the Wallace community who provided their support. The news press spoke to Brady Bogard, the theater board president, when the first plans for the neon sign began. Quote, around 2019, when we first got the money from the Moorbeck Foundation, we talked to Ryder, and how do you say his last name?
Ryder Gautreaux,
who has the connections to make these signs. He began talking with the company and setting it in motion. The process of making a neon sign is not one that one person can usually do. It takes someone to design it, another who fabricates the metal, electrical work, and painting of the sign is usually completed by multiple people, which can take years. The Metals Bar in Wallace recently went through a similar process. The Frank A. Moorbeck Community Foundation provided the initial funding for the new sign. The theater obtained the money, some more money from fundraising with the Silver Corner Bar, and raised around $1,000 to put into the sign and some other grant money. Quote, Ryder also ended up painting the sign. He had a bunch of paint from previous projects, so he completed that for us, and he hung it up for the theater. If you want to see the sign in person before a show, the 6th Street Melodrama Theater is on its last weekend for summer shows with Who Will Win the Doctor's Heart or Be Careful with Who You Cheer For. The theater will unfortunately not have an August show for its 2022-2023 season due to difficulty finding actors who have the time commitment for rehearsals and performances. Theater lovers shouldn't fret, as Men on Ice, directed by Sherry Bartle, will run in November. It's actually, they've done this before, and it's a really funny show. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit www.onthestage.tickets/6th-street-melodrama.
That is such a gem in Wallace.
It really is.
In the Silver Valley as a whole. Like, it is so fun.
I really do love it. I wish, and that is part of it, the time commitment is so much. Chance was in here and asked my dad once about being in the melodrama. And yeah, I mean, you have to rehearse at least like a month beforehand. So that's, you know, Monday through Friday, normally your nights are taken. And then when shows are going, Wednesday through Saturday nights, and then Sunday matinee. I mean, so it is. It's a lot of time. And yeah, it's fun. But when you know, like with this job, we wouldn't be able to do that. We wouldn't be able to at all. And for most jobs, it is difficult to do. So thankfully, there is a kind of dedicated group of people that keep it going. And I love it. It's one of my favorite places.
That is awesome. I love the place, too. Very, very quaint, very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Home of the lowest prices in all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Be sure to also check out www.blacksheepidaho.com and receive free shipping on orders over $100. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, celebrating 45 years as your favorite sporting goods store. Takes in two. Bonner County Daily Bee headlines out of Sandpoint for Wednesday, July 27th. Headline, Heartwood Center reopens its doors. That's by Daniel Radford. The sound of music and life will soon echo once again throughout the Heartwood Center, located at 615 Oak Street near Sandpoint's Granary District. The center, which closed to the public in spring of 2020 due to COVID-19 pandemic, will begin having public events this week. Maddox Farm Productions, the newest managers of the space, announced two concerts will be held at the center this week. The first, Slocan Ramblers will perform Wednesday, July 28th from 8 to 11:30 p.m., according to the HeartwoodSandpoint.com. The Slocans are Canada's bluegrass band to watch, rooted in tradition, fearlessly creative, and processing a bold, dynamic sound. The second concert will be Sunday, July 31st, 8 to 11:30 p.m. Local artist Josh Hedlund will open for Northwest-based singer-songwriter Anna Tivill. On Heartwood's website, Tivill is said to tour internationally.
Alrighty.
Talbot said his vision is to build on the center's rich history of gathering and community enrichment. Talbot said he hopes to use this week to get familiar with the space before taking August off to customize the center. Talbot says he plans to have 2 to 3 concerts each week by next spring. This month, Maddox Farms moved its full-time operations to the Heartwood Center. As always, there will be a focus on curating events that are family-friendly and inviting to all. While Maddox Farm will be utilizing the facility as its base, the center will still be available for weddings, conferences, fundraisers, and other events, Talbot explained. He added he is looking forward to hosting a variety of concerts and shows, from country to funk to DJs, as well as plays and comedy at the center. Quote, really just depends on what the community will support, Talbot said. Kind of sounds like the Sixth Street Melody.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, always good to have a little venue like that.
Mm-hmm. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com. Move us into Thursday, July 28th headlines.
Show to highlight Hope Murder. This is by Daniel Radford. The murder of a former Hope City clerk and subsequent investigation which brought her killer to justice will be the focus of an episode of Forensic Files 2 on HLN this weekend. Shirley Ramey, then age 79, was found murdered in her home in 2017. She had been shot twice, and the initial investigation went cold. It wasn't until 2019 that authorities were able to identify her killer. The case was cracked open thanks to forensic investigations and a ballistics database. 2 9mm shell casings recovered from the scene were entered into the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives National Integrated Ballistics Information Network. Woo!
Good job.
Doggy, thank you. The network, which allows for the high-definition capture and comparison of ballistic evidence, found a match. Quote, for over 2 years, the case remained unsolved. Bonner County Sheriff Daryl Wheeler wrote in a Facebook post announcing the episode. However, in August 2019, Bonner County Sheriff's deputies arrested Judith Carpenter, then age 57, of Coeur d'Alene, for Shirley Ramey's murder. Carpenter had been pulled over later the same day as Ramey's murder in Montana in an alleged road rage case. A Glock and a... how do you say that? Just 308 Savage Model 99?
Correct.
Okay. Lever-action rifle were seized and sat in storage until 2019. The 308 rifle matched the make and model of one that had gone missing from the Ramey residence the day of the murder. Then a federal investigator asked that the Glock be test-fired. The two 9mm casings found at the scene matched Carpenter's Glock after sheriff's officials in Lincoln County, Montana, test-fired the weapon. That led to Carpenter's arrest for Ramey's murder. Judith Carpenter was convicted for Ramey's murder and was sentenced to 15 years. She pled guilty with an Al Ford plea, which is when the defendant does not admit guilt per se, but acknowledges that the evidence against them is overwhelming.
An Al Ford plea, yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Wheeler encouraged the public to tune in this Sunday, July 31st, 2022 at 10:30 p.m. for the new season premiere at Forensic Files 2 on HLN, which will show how investigators were able to finally solve the case. Sounds kind of interesting.
It does. Mm-hmm. Tune in. Check it out.
Tune in. I do like me some Forensic Files.
There you go. Moving on, Friday, July 29th headlines. County budget in survival mode.
Uh-oh.
This is by Daniel Radford. The county is in survival mode as it attempts to keep employees and hire new ones amid a tight budget hit hard by record inflation. While Commission Chairman Dan McDonald and Commissioner Jeff Connolly said they support a proposal to boost pay for the rank and file of county workers, they all but rejected a recommendation from the county's Human Resources Department that would, in their view, unnecessarily boost salaries for higher-ranking positions. The plan is part of an effort by the county to address employee loss to the private sector. The Bonner County Sheriff's Office and Road and Bridge are both under the significant personnel pressures, and the Sheriff's Office is having trouble retaining patrol officers. Quote, I think the biggest impact for employee loss for the Sheriff's Office, at least according to what the Sheriff has told me, is patrol, McDonald said. While Human Resources recommended a mostly graduated increase, raising the wages of the lowest paid at BCSO the most, McDonald and Connolly expressed concern about a proposed 14% increase for the higher ranks. McDonald and Connolly agreed patrol officers deserve a 14.49% pay increase. However, for the positions that are already the highest paid at BCSO, captains, lieutenants, undersheriff, and the sheriff, neither commissioner found a 14% increase to be the most effective use of the county's resources. Administrative positions, McDonald pointed out, are not the main, quote, point of pain when it comes to the employee retention. Commissioners hope to have a revised payroll adjustment plan by the next budgetary meeting, which will be held Monday at 2 p.m. in the county administrative building. Nothing new here, folks.
Nothing new. Inflation, people aren't getting paid enough. The world is great, my friends.
Yep. It's all gravy.
It's all
and it's really
gravy.
Hot out. It's really hot. Hecla Mining Company is the leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Takes into Bonner's Ferry Herald headlines for Thursday, July 28th.
County accepts ARPA funds for projects. This is by Emily Bosung. After consulting with county attorneys, Boundary County Commissioners accepted the first two American Rescue Plan Act payments for various county projects at the July 18th meeting.
Finally decided to pull a trigger on that.
Some in attendance were not pleased.
Uh-oh.
Chief Deputy Prosecutor Tevis Hull has been doing research on the ARPA funds for months on behalf of Boundary County. The commissioners had previously said they would accept the funds, but had not decided if they would use the funds in the future. That was partly due to the final rule not being available at the time of acceptance, and the commissioners waiting for litigation to finish and to have more clarity on what executive orders or strings are attached to the funds. Hull used an analysis from Bonner County. At the time of acceptance of the money in January 2021, any executive orders in place at that time is what the county is bound under. By federal case law, anything executive order issued afterward would not apply. Commissioner Tim Bertling added that federal employees are bound by more requirements, but the county and other municipalities are not bound by those requirements. The motion was made and seconded to accept the funds. The GOP nominee for Bertling's seat, Steve Fioravanti, asked commissioners if those in attendance could object to the motion. However, Commissioner Dan Dinning replied that the meeting was not a public hearing, but commissioners doing business. Hull told the commissioners after researching the ARPA funds and by studying a finding by Bonner County Boundary County would be obliged to follow executive orders that were in place at time of signing. Not any additional executive orders by the President of the United States. In response to questions by the Bonner's Ferry Herald on why the commissions have held off from accepting the funds, Bertling said he wanted more clarification as to what the funds can be spent on. He added that information needed to be precise so the county would not need to pay back the money at a later date. The county has until 2024 to dedicate funds and has until 2026 to spend the funds. Commissioners have said the money is in a trust account, earning interest that the county gets to keep even if commissioners send the funds back. Until commissioners decide to send the funds back or use them, the money is earning interest.
Hey, if you have to spend the money, spend the money.
Spend the money.
Because otherwise it just goes back to the feds.
That's right.
And, We got stuff that we need to spend money around.
And we're not going to disparage the feds here. We don't need to make enemies with the federal government. But,
oh, boy.
But, you know. You guys know.
What did Ronald Reagan say? The scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Very interesting.
Very interesting, yeah. Yes. This episode, once again, is brought to you by the Silver Corner Bar in Wallace, Idaho. Go check them out downtown,
folks.
They have the most, they have the award-winning cocktails in North Idaho. Best cocktails.
They really have phenomenal cocktails. Yeah. Award-winning cocktails. And like we said, Jocelyn's amazing.
Check out the Lux Rooms upstairs.
Yep. Can't say enough good things about, we truly do love the Silver Corner.
Yeah, we are. Like, as recommended by the
highly recommended. The News West Coast. Yes.
Yep. All right, everybody. I'm about to lose my voice, so I'm about to lose my mind. There you go. Perfect. Well, that's already happened.
It's already gone.
That's all done. It's getting hot in here. I can't talk anymore. I have to move a lot of things over the weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going to be great. All right, everybody. Thanks again. See you later.